everybody, and welcome back to the Be Better podcast. We are a little bit unique again this week. We are on location, so I am actually in Tampa, Florida, and I am talking to an old friend of mine, Dia Noor. And Dia is his home is in South Beach, but Dia is actually not there. He is in another part of Florida. Dia, where are you coming out from today?
Hey, Chris. I'm actually in Windermere, Florida, which is not too far. I mean, right outside of Orlando and pretty close to Clermont, which is a big training ground for triathletes.
Absolutely. Well, you know, Clermont is, they have a big race there. There used to be Olympic Training Center there.
NTC.
Exactly. Are you, going to go up there and do any training up there while you're in Clermont?
You know, I think I'm going to spend some family time here, but I'll probably go for some runs. Leanne's here as well, Leanne Cave, and she's probably going to want to probably head that way as well. So I'll probably see some old friends, but nothing's formally planned yet.
Okay.
So.
Never heard of the person you were just talking about. Pronounced Leanda? Was that it?
That is it. You want me to start out? I'd be happy to do so.
I'll give her a Google and I'll see if I can relate the name back. So we'll look at that. If you don't know Dia, he is essentially the brains behind the brand of Ventum. And Ventum is maybe one of the most innovative bike brands, I would say, on the market right now. And Ventum is one of these bikes that when you see it, you absolutely know exactly what you're looking at. It is so unique. It is so fast. And Dia, you still currently are the fastest bike frame on record in the wind tunnel. Is that correct?
So far, yes. Yeah. So, you know, we'll see what the future holds, but we'll keep innovating and hopefully keep that title for as long as we're around.
Absolutely. You and I have known each other for a while, and I remember when kind of the information about Ventum got leaked, and Leanda was showing me some of the photos before it was public, and I was like, I totally got a three-quarter just thinking about it. And but for the people that don't really kind of know the backstory, give us the genesis of where Ventum came from.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a pretty interesting story. You know me, so I don't come from an engineering background or a technical background. I come from a business background. I used to own a telecom company prior to this and another company before that. Back in 2014, I got the pleasure to meet the co-founder, one of my very good friends today, Jimmy Sear. Now, Jimmy Sear and his father, Peter Sear, his father is a world record engineer. World records in mining and other market sectors. And when I met them in the summer of 2014, I had just gotten out of my last business. And, you know, Jimmy was tinkering with this project. So finally he lets me in on it. And it was incredible. Him and his father for the maybe 3 years prior to that, as well as some aerodynamicists that are abroad, were tinkering around with how to make the world's fastest triathlon bike. Now, if you guys don't know, Jimmy Sear was a world number one ranked under 23 professional triathlete. So it became, you know, it started with a hobby and then it became an obsession to make the world's fastest triathlon bike. So they started, you know, with CFD, they started with design work, they went through several iterations of different concepts, and then they finally landed on the Ventum. Wasn't even called the Ventum back then. And funny enough, actually probably nobody knows this, but they were named after World War II planes. I think, I can't remember exactly. I think it was called the Bullfighter.
Okay.
Was the Ventum. That was like the code name for it. So he's showing me all this. So he's showing me all this, you know, and I'm freshly out of a job, essentially, enjoying a mini retirement. And I remember him very well saying, like, you know, we're going to make a few of those and see how it goes. I'm like, a few of those? No way. This is so innovative. This is so new. This is actually, you know, sure, it's definitely not a huge market and it definitely has a lot of competition. But I'm like, this is innovative and this is different. Let's take this to the market. Let's scale it up. So that's kind of how, it, you know, the first beginnings of Ventum started. So I am on the business side, Jimmy's on the technical side, and it was great because it was a perfect marriage. There was such little overlap that both of us really knew what we had to do. And I find that to be very difficult in startups. We had clear roles, and that helped from the start.
Did it ever like become intimidating to try and break into such a integrated market? Because the bike market is very big. It's almost like kind of trying to create your own car. I would think like you may have come across some of the same, problems that Tesla probably has come across, where you know you're a smaller brand, a unique brand that's very, very innovative, but you're going up against the Fords, you're going up against the Chevys. Yours is a specialized, the Treks, you know, all those out there. Was that ever something that where you like, oh, I don't know if this is going to be a good idea?
You know, it's funny, Chris. We get compared a lot with Tesla. I mean, like probably like dozens of times, and it's actually a really good example, and it's a very good analogy. It is exactly that. And I'll answer your question by saying ignorance is bliss. I think we had some of that on our side where, you know, I think if I know what I know now and how hard it was going to be, and I always knew it was going to be hard. Any startup is hard, right? 90% of startups fail within the first year.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think we were lucky and blessed maybe by not realizing how difficult it was going to be and how competitive it was. So, you know, obviously when we did the market research, I'm being a bit, you know, facetious here, but yeah, you know, I think had I been in the industry, so let's put it this way, if I was coming from another bike brand and try to start this brand, I think I'd have been a lot more intimidated. But because I came from out of the industry, besides having fresh eyes and maybe a lack of well, let's just call it experience, right, in the market,
yeah,
that I think that was actually a positive.
So from the time that you guys had, you know, had brought this to market to now, how much has it grown? Like how big has the company gotten? How popular has this bike become? Because I feel like for me, I know it from my spectrum. I know the people that are riding them. I know the pros that are out there. It's like, you know, and I feel like I may be in a different kind of bubble. Give the people that are listening just kind of an idea of like how much has it grown? Like how big is this? Is it global? Is it just international? Is it just national, or where are we at right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'll tell you, it started with, you know, me and Jimmy in a little room, right? And today we stand as the official global bike partner of Ironman.
That's
now,
cool.
To put this in perspective, yeah, it's really cool. And, you know, it's awesome to see. And to put it in perspective, Ironman's never had, in its history, and, you know, since the corporation was created, a global bike partner. They've had regional bike partners here and there, but they've never had one company that they partner with all over the world. So to answer your question, you know, obviously we're a hybrid model, so we're a direct-to-consumer model, but we're also in stores. We've got dealers all over America. We also partner up with Velofix, who has over 100 franchises. They deliver our bikes as well. We've got distribution all over the world. I would say our second most, after America, the second most popular distributor is Asia. So
really?
Japan is a very big market. Yeah. Japan is a very big market for us. Southeast Asia is a big market for us, and in Latin America as well. You know, and growing. So
that's kind of amazing. I mean, I'm sorry. That's great. I mean, that's awesome to hear. I guess I didn't know that it was that big globally. I mean, I had known that it was a great bike and that it was a great brand and a huge innovation. But I didn't know it was that big. So let's get back to the Ironman relationship. Did you approach Ironman? Did Ironman approach you? How does partnering with Ironman really benefit the brand?
Well, it's been many years in the making. So we have partnered up with Ironman. To be quite honest, I don't know who reached out to who. I mean, it was three, four years ago when we started on a relationship on a much smaller scale. We grew that to becoming the Ironman World Championship bike, which was just for Kona. And now it's obviously, you know, grown to the global deal. I mean, I think, look, at some point you have to realize that, you know, Ironman is a big player in this field. Like, you know, I don't think anyone can argue that. Of course, there are other series out there, but I mean, I would say a lot of times we speak to people outside of the sport, and he said, you know, triathlon, they're like a little confused, and you say Ironman, and they're like, oh, yeah, of course. So,
yeah,
you know, having a partner with that strong of a recognition of a brand helps the company in our position, right? So, you know, when we're saying we're huge, we're global, again, let's keep it in perspective. We're no Specialized. We're no Trek. We're no, not even Canyon, right? Those guys are still big, big boys. We're going to get there. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
Especially as we start with new product offerings, which I can probably tell you about a little bit later. But so where we are in our growth, we just signed, you know, this partnership with Ironman to be perfect. It also really helped us on a global scale where, yeah, we're if you're in the triathlon market, you've heard of Ventum specifically in the U.S.
Yep.
You have also another market, but you know, as a growing brand, you make decisions, right? And so sometimes, you know, it's either or versus both. So if you want to market in the U.S. or in France, probably choose the U.S., right? Because that's probably going to help the most return. We don't have to make that choice anymore because I'm in such a strong global presence. So even in areas that we feel we maybe had weaker reach, they've really strengthened that for us.
Yeah. Do you see, like, is the goal here to just grow this and be an autonomous brand, or is it to would you be willing to entertain a buyout offer from, say, one of the biggies? Like, say LaPierre came to you and said, you know what, we want to buy you out. We want to buy this. We want to take everything from you. Here's $100 million. Not that I'm making that offer right now, but is that something that where you would say, yeah, I would do that, or is the dedication towards innovation, building something new, is that where does it end up lying to you? Would you go there, or how close is this to your heart?
Well, I'll tell you this. I've never been more passionate about anything other than that. So, you know, it's very near and dear to my heart, as well as to Jimmy. So selling it just to make money is not really on the table. You know, we love what we're doing. We love how innovative it is. We love where it's going. And we've got so much more we can do and we are doing. So just a sale just to get out doesn't really interest us. I think the only way we would entertain a sale today is if I knew it would better the brand.
Okay.
And by that I mean, you know, again, referring back to what I was saying, the either or. So Jimmy and I make a lot of decisions where we have other things that are designed, other product lines that we'd love to bring out, but as a smaller company, you know, you have to choose.
Yeah.
So if a buyout would ensure, or a cash infusion, or it would ensure that we're able to, you know, make these projects happen and bring them to market faster, then yeah, because that would be for the good of the company, we would do that. I'm not interested in just selling. I don't want to say selling out because it doesn't sound right, but you know what I mean. Just selling in. Yeah.
I totally get that. I mean that's exactly I think where I thought your answer was going to lie. I mean this you're not just in it for a quick buck. This is a passion project for you, and I feel like that, you know, that you can totally get that in just our conversation here, and then our conversations in the past, that it is that big piece. So you hinted at it. So I'm gonna bring it out right now. Is there another bike on the horizon? Is there other products that we can maybe come to expect from Ventum? Is there a big reveal that you're gonna give? Like you're gonna give me the scoop on here today?
Yeah, I don't think I'm for sure I haven't said this on the podcast, but I have said it probably. Yes. Yeah. Absolutely. So there is a UCI legal road bike coming out.
What?
Yeah. And that's just been fantastic to work on. We're really, really excited. Now it is UCI legal. So before the first, you know, so a lot of times I get, when I say to somebody even privately about this, the first thing I hear is, does it have a down tube? I'm like, yes, it has a down tube. So, I'm trying to support you guys. There is a down tube to the road bike. The UCI does have some, you know, tubes and angles and shape rules that you have to fall within. If not, you cannot use those bikes. So obviously we want it to be UCI legal. But so the innovation had to come in a different way. And I don't want to say too much, but
okay. Any ideas when we might be able to start seeing some prototypes hitting the market?
There are some prototypes around. You just may not know that they're vector. They've been around. And if you see Leander's been riding quite a bit of miles on them in Miami. There's some around Boulder. Don't hold me to this, but I think the plan is we're going to show it in Kona.
Yes.
I think that would be a good time.
All right. Do you need somebody to help you go there to show it off? Like maybe somebody to kind of stand in front of it and wave like a palm leaf at it? Because I'm available that week, just to let you know.
Maybe you should stand behind it. It's one of them, might be a little hard to see.
That's super exciting. Like that would open up. I could see as a whole new market because I think of a lot of pros that you guys are sponsoring right now. Not only do they race Ironman distance, but they also race in that draft legal distance, and I think back to,
exactly,
where like Leanda's upbringing, like her first world championships were in the draft legal, realm, and you have to have that UCI legal bike. And that would definitely be a huge piece to not only your sponsorship, but also I would think to what you're able to contribute to athletes and to the sport in general.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I can think on top of my head, we got Lindsay Jurgnak, who does also the Major League Triathlon, and that's draft legal. You got AJ Bacco, who does it. And so for us, I think the introduction to the road bike is really going to be to our market, which is predominantly, obviously, the triathlon market. I think that's going to be step number one. After that, we really have to hit the true cyclists, the true roadies, and that's going to be a whole new set of challenges, right? Because you're looking at different publications, different mindset, different marketing, different partnerships. So, as exciting as that is, we know that there's a long road ahead to just get the road bike in front of the cycling community that, let's face it, is bigger than the triathlon community, obviously. So,
yeah, I can see that there's...
It could be more exciting.
And there's probably I'm guessing there's I would feel a little bit nervous at some point because the bigger you guys become, the more maybe you are perceived as a threat to some of those mainstays. And I still think back to the car industry and no matter how innovative you are and no matter how much of a breakthrough your product is, there's always going to be somebody out there I would think trying to one up you or kind of cut you down in ways that are just maybe underhanded, I would say, and I wouldn't want to see that happen.
Well, hopefully not underhanded, but I'll tell you, that benefits the consumer, and I'm okay with that. Not the underhanded part. Obviously, I'd like a fair playing field, but if we're pushing other companies to innovate and other companies are pushing us to do the same, that the end result, it's great. It's great for the sport. It's great for the consumer. You're not going to hear complaints out of me on that. Is it making my life more difficult? Sure, but I'm a big boy and I know what I got myself into. So that, that's a small price to pay. Again, we are passionate about this. So.
Yeah. Have you looked back like it's I think of some like a brand that if I had to like parallel a bike brand kind of and I would think in maybe in the style of where you guys have come it Cervelo comes to mind and I think of the Vroom and White kind of coming out with that first TT frame and how they became super innovative, moved into the the road bike frame. Do you ever look back or at other kind of pairings because those guys were kind of the same thing. Do you ever look back and say what did they do right, what did they do wrong, how do we make sure we hit those metrics or we avoid some of those pitfalls?
Yeah, actually we do, and in fact Cervelo is a case study that we look at quite closely because. I hold them on a pedestal. I think they do a great job. They make a fantastic bike. And that's my personal opinion. We also look at Canyon. I think Canyon's doing some really great things right now. They've really helped the direct consumer model kind of take some more traction.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was actually quite happy to see Canyon come into the U.S. market because it only makes our job a little bit easier. when more brands are coming to Consumer Direct. So yeah, we definitely take cues on what they do right and what they do wrong. You know, it's tough because a lot of it is also very retroactive, right? So you know, it's hard for me to point at, you know, another company and say, hey, they did this wrong. I'm not going to use actually specific examples, but
yeah.
But you know, how do you judge? You know, is it the lack of sales? Is it the lack of popularity? Is it blogs? So you know, it's difficult to decide, you know, what they've done right and wrong. I think there's a lot of opinion there. It's
true. I'd kind of like taken a little bit of a right turn here. One thing that I've always been curious about, and I don't know if it's which came first, a chicken or the egg, but you and Jimmy have like the exact same haircut. and for those who are listening and don't know exactly what I'm talking about, go Google Dia. Google Jimmy, and you will see that they both have like huge, beautiful heads of like just curly hair. And I'm interested to know, like, was that what drew you guys together at some small level, or did that just kind of evolve?
Maybe a little bit of both, honestly. I like to say that my head is 90% of my game. I've got nothing else past that. So I've had it all for quite some time now. But looking back, yeah, I mean, Jimmy's head is wild, and I'm sure that had a lot to play with, right? Like, just like, hey, these two guys are different. They're unusual. They don't fit that mold, right? And so, but I will say that Jimmy's hair has gotten bigger since the company started.
Well,
so
it's almost like your trademark now, isn't it?
It really is. And so I think
at some point that should be a t-shirt where it's just like kind of an outline of the silhouette of the two of you. And I think that would make, like, I know that you guys every year when you do it, you do the Kona shirt, right? And not only do I, but my children have the Down Tube is for Dinosaurs shirt, which I love that shirt. I get so many compliments on that one. That's a great classic. But I think at some point in time, if you could put the two of you kind of like in that silhouette, that might be pretty darn epic.
You know, I'm running this by marketing as soon as we hang up. I want to make this happen.
I'm all there. And if it happens, just I'm a size large.
Your kids get free shirts.
There
you
go.
You don't have to pay retail.
Don't have to pay retail. We'll give you a sweet discount on it. Yeah, that's awesome.
We do free shipping. So, yeah.
So you said that Ventum not only just they are direct. You guys are direct to consumer, but you are in some. You're in some stores too, right? I know that in Minneapolis, Endurance House and Twin Cities as carries you guys. And I know that down in Miami there's some, but if somebody's looking to buy, like, let's say somebody's looking to buy a Ventum, what is your recommendation as not only a bike owner, bike shop, or a bike brand owner, but as a consumer, is it better to go direct to consumer, or is it better to go through a shop, or how would you recommend somebody going around just starting the process of finding a Ventum?
I think the best process, if you're interested in Ventum, is to find us at one of the expos. We are at like so many expos every year. You get to do free demos, and you can try the bike. You can even race on the bike. We let people do that. And the reason is because the bike speaks for itself, right? And especially if you're not used to what they like to call an untraditional bike frame, mm-hmm. you may look at it and think like, oh, it's not stiff, or oh, you know, it's going to ride differently. And then you get on it and you realize it's even extremely stiff, and the power translates to the pedal. So the more people test ride a Ventum, that is, you know, the better it is for us. So my first recommendation is, yeah, I mean, if you have a local store that has it, by all means. You know, I love to support the local stores that are actually going there and test ride it. If not, find us at any of the Ironman events, and even non-Ironman events is a good start. Those are my suggestions. But get on one. Is really important to me.
Yeah,
you know, because I know you'll notice a difference.
Well, and I know you're like you are definitely a connoisseur of like the better things in life, and you know, you've got a beautiful house, you've got an incredible life partner with Leanda. You may be one of my favorite Ubers that I've ever called. So for those of you that don't know, like, so I still have photos of Dia and I in my phone that I save. And I refer back to when I say, you know, this guy is my favorite Uber driver because Dia had, well, you sold it, I believe, but you had an orange Lamborghini convertible.
Right? I did sell it, by the way, recently. I know. I'm sorry.
What model was it?
It was a Gallardo.
Oh man, that thing was so.
No, I miss it.
It's you know,
and actually.
Oh, so baller! Going cruising down like South Beach was like everybody's just staring at you, and you're like, "Yeah, no worries. Will you stop staring at our orange Lambo? It's embarrassing. Okay, stop it.
That's probably one of the reasons I sold it
because of the just due to too much attention.
It was time. You know, it was my car. Like, and I love to drive that vehicle, and I had it also when we were in Colorado, and. That was so much fun. You know, we could really let it out and have a blast with it. And, you know, it was a great car and I loved it. I needed something maybe a little bit more practical, so we switched to an SUV.
You didn't go minivan.
I missed it, for sure. Was that? No, but hey, hold on. Going off minivans. I love minivans. I know. This is like one of the quirky things. I know. And like when those rows like fall completely flat and like, it looks like a bed in the back, I get really happy. We can fit like 8 bikes in there.
Oh, that's so true.
I'm one of those few guys that actually really gets excited when the car rental gives you a minivan. I'm really over the moon. So yeah, in the end, I think that's quite strange.
What did you ever top that thing out at?
The fastest I've been.
Hypothetically speaking,
I could have been on a highway and I could have hit 183.
Oh my god!
That would be the.
That is just I can't
hypothetically.
Even, as a former cop, I've never even gone that fast, and I was like authorized to do so. That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, I was not authorized to do so.
Did it, like, how free, were you white knuckling it at that point? Like, did you just get to there and you're like, oh my God, I can't believe this, and we're dust, and then just back it down?
Yeah, I mean, you know what, that, again, I mean, whoever's listening, hypothetical, not up. when you get to that speed, when the speed limit is 65, and you're going, call it 180, just to make it easy, or even 60 and 180, that means it's as if you're going 120 miles an hour, and there's cars that are going zero. So there's stopped cars. So can you imagine going down a road with parked cars, and you're going 120 miles an hour? And the reason I explain it that way is because the reaction time gets really, really short. So a car that is quite far away ahead of you decides to merge into your lane, which even if you're going 90 or whatever, it would be completely acceptable and with plenty of room. When you're going 180, that car is coming up. You know, you're going to come up to that car extremely quickly. So at that point, I mean, by the way, it's all unsafe. No one should be driving on highways, on public roads that way. It's kind of idiotic, and I don't do it anymore. But
Hypothetically speaking.
But, when, you know, it, at that point, it becomes a crapshoot, right?
Yeah.
Because there's nothing you can do. You can't predict anymore.
No.
You know what I mean. Like, you can't predict the style of the driving ahead of you because you're coming up to it so fast. So.
Yeah. Did you ever race it? Like a kind of a Fast and Furious type of thing?
You know, we take it to the track. The problem, every time you go, you got to go get new tires, and that can get a little pricey.
Oh, I can bet. That's.
We like fighting fast things, so, you know, and that's why I bet them.
You know, fast cars, fast bikes, right?
We're all about speed, so.
All right, I'm gonna ask you a question that I do not know the answer to, and I'm not sure that we've never talked about it before. But it's something. When I Googled your name today, it came up, and I'm not sure if it's you or if it's somebody that has your exact same name. What relationship do you have with the Kristen Bell movie The Lifeguard?
I was an executive producer of that movie.
Okay,
along with some
others. Tell me this. How does that happen? How have I never known that? And give me the quick story on that. How does that come about?
super quick story is, you know, it's not that difficult to become an executive producer is what I found out. You know, obviously director, I have the lion's share of the work to do, and obviously the directing, the casting. Producers just kind of put it together, and it's usually the financial part of movies. So I had an opportunity through an old college friend of mine, and I took it. So yeah, it was actually really exciting. I went on set. We were filming in in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh. There you go, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And it was really cool. It was, you know, one of my favorite experiences. And so yeah, that's the only film I've ever been involved in, though. So
how do we go about maybe like going out and having like dinner with Kristen Bell and Dax Shepard? Because they, outside of you and Leanda, they seem like maybe two of the funnest people in the world.
When you find out, you let me know, because I wouldn't even be able to do that.
Oh man,
that wasn't in the contract.
It wasn't in the rider. You didn't get a chance. You didn't get her personal cell phone. Because they are.
In retrospect, I should have.
Oh, totally. Because they are. I mean, they are maybe the funniest couple in the world. Like Dax actually does. He does a podcast as well. And he's very funny, and I think I think she's a very, very talented actress as well. But together they seem to be just like this couple that they're super fun together. I mean, like I said, like you and Landa, seem like you guys are like super fun together. And every time I've hung out with both of you guys are like great. You know,
doesn't Kristen Bell have like an obsession with like sloth bears?
She has an obsession with sloths.
Did you know about this?
Yes, a sloth.
Yeah, sloth bears.
And you know what I also just found out about is she will not go into a pool without wearing gloves. She has pool gloves because she cannot stand having pruned hands. Yes. So I saw Dax Shepard was on, I want to say Jimmy Kimmel or something like that. And he was talking about that whenever she swims, she wears gloves. Like she actually has gloves that she wears into the water. And because she can't stand the pruning of her hands.
Makes sense.
Exactly. I mean, I think that's just hilarious. Just hilarious because everybody has their own little things. But I mean, those are sloths. That's definitely something that I don't know. I can't say I've ever touched a sloth.
Me neither. I mean, I don't dislike them, but I never really thought to seek one out.
No, I don't find an attraction. I mean, koala bears? I'm all in on koala bears, dude. Like,
do you know whose nickname that is, right?
It's you.
That's Leanda's nickname.
Oh, is it Leanda's? Leanda is?
Yeah. Yeah, we're getting a little personal here, Chris.
I didn't know. I did not know that was
her. Leanda's pet name.
And did you come up with that?
I did. KB for short.
Okay. Is there a story behind that, or is it just should we just leave it like that?
You know, she's from, she grew up in Australia.
Yep.
So that had part to do with it.
Okay, we'll leave it as a mystery. Maybe a part two at some point, or next time that you and I are crushing a bottle of rosé at like 1 in the afternoon around your pool, we can just go into it.
There you go. That's probably better.
Done. Well, Dia, you know what? It's been awesome chatting with you on the phone. I don't want to take up any more of your time away from your family. I want to say so much thank you for being such a great innovator in a industry that I hold near and dear, biking and triathlon. Thank you for being a friend, and thank you for being on the call today.
Wow. Well, I can't thank you enough, and honestly, it's been a pleasure to be a friend, and thanks for your support. Honestly, It's been a long and fun road, and a lot more to come, that's for sure.
All right. Well, everybody, go out and check out Ventum. Check out the Lifeguard movie and put some residual cash in Dia's pocket. He could probably use it
please.
for the next Ventum brands coming out. And we look forward to seeing hopefully that reveal maybe coming up in Kona. Dia, thank you so much for being on the show today. Everybody, thanks for listening again. Make sure that you check that you like the show on iTunes. Follow us, subscribe to us. And until next time, my name is Chris Swartha. I am a coach, and this has been the Be Better Podcast. Just set sunset for